Welcome to the Education Gadfly Show. I'm your host, Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. Today, Umut Ozek and Lou Mariano, researchers at the RAND Corporation, join us to discuss whether grade retention helps or harms students. Then, on the Research Minute, Amber reports on a new study that examines if cash payouts can improve student attendance. All this on the Education Gadfly Show.
This is the Education Gadfly Show.
My image of you as a high schooler has completely changed now.
What were you picturing?
Thought maybe you were a little bit on the nerdy side as well. I'm thinking
nerdy and being to girls, Mike.
What does Gadfly say?
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at fordhaminstitute.org. And now, please welcome our special guests for this week, Umut Ozek and Lou Mariano. Umut and Lou, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Michael. Great to be here.
Umut is a senior economist and Lou a senior statistician, both at the RAND Corporation. And we're going to talk to them about a new report for Fordham that looks at the evidence on early grade retention policies. Before we get to that, let me welcome, as always, my co-host, David Griffith.
Hey, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's great to be with you all. And I know you've been working together. David was working with these two on their paper. This is part of our Think Again series at Fordham, where we're trying to tackle conventional wisdom in education that might not be right. Or maybe it was right once upon a time, but the evidence has changed. And so that's what we were trying to do with this latest great piece. Let's talk about that on Ed Reform Update. All right, guys. Well, you wrote a great piece for Brookings, and we saw it, and we thought it would be fantastic to give you a little more space to flesh out what you're seeing out there in the research and in the studies. You know, there was a conventional wisdom at one point that said, hey, we really should not ask kids to be, quote, held back and have to redo a grade. And especially if what that meant was, you know, that the kid can't read at the end of the third grade, we'll just have them do the third grade over again. And, you know, it's like Einstein's definition of insanity, right? Where we just expect a different result doing the same thing. But the better design policies don't necessarily look like that anymore. And the evidence doesn't look like that anymore. So tell us, grade retention, always a good thing, sometimes a good thing, particularly in the wake of the pandemic?
Well, I hate to sound like a classic economist, but my answer to that question will be, it depends. So it depends on a lot of factors. It depends on the grade levels you're focusing on. That's a point we try to make in the piece. Elementary school grade retention seems to be more beneficial than retaining kids in later grades. At least that's what the recent evidence suggests. The second thing this depends on, the answer to this question depends on, is whether you can provide instructional support to these kids, not only to those that are retained, but also those who are flagged for retention. And that needs to be, there needs to be an instructional support component to these grade retention policies as well. So in that sense, this is not grade, this is not only grade retention, this is grade retention coupled with instructional support that tries to address the educational needs of these kids, and not only the kids who are retained, but also the kids who are flagged for retention. So those kids who are performing so low that they are deemed as those who would benefit from retention. And I guess the third factor, the answer to this question depends on, is the cost of it. Because one of the arguments against grade retention is that this additional year of schooling, and this could be costly for taxpayers, but there are several factors you need to think about when you're thinking about the cost of it. One of that, as we mentioned in the brief, is that this cost is not incurred at the time of the retention, but this is incurred when these kids reach 12th grade, right around the time that they would normally be graduating from high school, but they are not because they are retained. So in that sense, the present value of this cost could be much less than the actual costs that you are thinking about. And the other factors you need to think about is if there's a positive effect of this retention on the future outcomes of these kids, perhaps these benefits could offset some of these costs that you're thinking about. So it could be a question of whether you want to provide these resources to these kids now or later. So because these kids might end up needing more resources down the road in terms of remedial courses in middle and high school, or maybe they might need an additional year to graduate from high school. That's also something you need to think about when you're thinking about the cost of retention.
That makes sense. And the cost here, I mean, obviously, like we could save money if we encourage more kids to drop out of high school, right? I mean, that would be a savings to the education system. It would certainly not be cost-free for those kids. It probably wouldn't be cost-free for society, right? Because, maybe those kids then get in trouble, they end up in the criminal welfare system, et cetera. Lou, let's walk out just a little bit on these studies. I mean, it seemed like way back when people would do studies, just correlational studies, and say, well, kids who were retained, guess what? They go on and they really struggle and they're more likely to drop out or they don't achieve as well. But, there's always a sort of correlation versus causation problem. What the newer studies, how are they able to try to pinpoint, the actual effect of retention and these instructional supports?
Oh, yeah, it's an interesting question. It's a big criticism of the prior work is that they were correlational and not from a causal framework. The rise of standardized testing really enabled folks to standardize how folks get promoted, right? And so a test-based promotion system then allows you to get a single standard for all students that they have to meet in order to move on to the next grade. And that allows a comprehensive look at how that standard is implemented, as opposed to a principal and a teacher and maybe a parent getting together and trying to decide individually for each student how that worked for them. That might or may not have been a good idea, a good decision for that student, but there's no way to kind of generalize and look at that process altogether. The test-based criteria then allow for modern causal inference techniques to be applied and really understand the broader kind of average causal effect that's happening for these kids.
All right. And basically what you can compare the kids who were, just barely, scored high enough in order to not be retained versus the kids that just barely scored below the bar and were retained. And then you can see how they did, right?
That's exactly right.
So a couple things. I want to get David in here because he's been thinking about these issues a lot as well. We published a post by Buzzy Kettleman, who is an education analyst out of Baltimore, saying, hey, a lot of these states are doing grade retention in third grade. That's when we've got the first state test. So you understand that. But, we should probably be doing it even sooner. You could be using other tests like the NWEA's measures of academic progress or whatever the district is using for, K-1-2 testing. Most of them are doing something. If third grade reading retention is good, probably first grade reading retention would be even better because, you're trying to address the problem before it really festers. If kids are struggling, you're going to know it early. Does that sound? I mean, I know we don't have evidence on that because of the testing situation, but does that kind of ring true to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, since there's no research on it, I'm as qualified as anyone to offer it.
Right? You're particularly qualified.
Right. When I heard it, it rang true to me. I mean, I think we all recognize that third grade is a little bit arbitrary and sort of a function of the way that education policy in the United States has developed, right? Having said that, I guess I can imagine it being too soon, right? In other words, I don't think we want to do it with three-year-olds or four-year-olds, right? You have to wait long enough to have clear evidence that a kid is kind of off track. And so I'm not sure what the sweet spot is, but I think it's a reasonable reaction, right? And I think one of the things that's maybe a little bit implicit, although we try to bring it out in the brief, is that we're hoping actually that these third grade retention systems spur action in earlier grades. And if that's really what we're hoping, then I feel like there's at least a case for actually having a retention system in those grades. So my personal reaction is yes, at least, within reason, it makes sense to explore that. But I am curious to know what our guests think.
No, and you do hear out of, say, Mississippi, we published another post of somebody arguing that, that grade retention policy not only made a difference for the kids who were retained, but it did change practice in those early grades. I mean, teachers hate the idea of their students being retained. And so perhaps this gets them to work harder, work smarter, and do the science of reading reforms more aggressively to avoid having a student who ends up getting caught in that. From their perspective, maybe that helps. So guys, Very different findings, though, once kids are older, middle school and high school. It sounds like the advice to school districts is don't do it. It doesn't make sense then. Any thoughts about that? Why is it not working as the kids get older?
You're absolutely spot on. The overwhelming majority of the studies that look at middle school grade retention, including some of Lou's work with Paco, they show very little benefits and some adverse effects on high school outcomes, especially when it comes to dropout rates and high school graduation. And these are mostly studies that look at eighth grade retention. There are other studies, I believe some of Lou's studies also look at sixth and seventh grade retention as well. When it comes to the reasons behind why the results are less, quite different when we look at middle school grades versus elementary school grades, the answer is that we don't really know, but we can speculate that perhaps it places more emotional burden on these kids when they are held back a year in middle school versus elementary school. That could be an important factor, like trying to adjust to a new peer group in middle school could be more detrimental for these kids emotionally, and that could affect their engagements. That can lead to disengagement from schooling, and that could induce the adverse effects that we see. But I believe Lou would have some ideas about why this might be happening.
You know, it's interesting. New York City is a nice case example here. They have essentially the same, well, when it was in effect, it's not in effect anymore, but when that policy was in effect through the Bloomberg years, they had the same policy for grades 3 through 8. And, you know, when we looked at the longer-term outcomes of those grades through high school, very different story for retention in elementary grades versus retention in middle school grades. The sixth, seventh, and eighth graders were shown some adverse effects in terms of lower graduation rates, higher dropout rates, as Uman had said. We don't see those same negative effects in the earlier grade retention. So same policy, but different reaction. So it could be an emotional component to that. As Uman said, it could also be just, you know, the timing of this needs to happen sooner in order to achieve the benefits. But it's really unknown at this point. It's an open question as to why.
Well, and it strikes me, you know, there's, I think, a lot of places where they have some kind of special ninth grade policy where they try to, you know, at least identify kids that are, you know, way behind and give intensive supports. You know, I've even heard Tom Kane at Harvard talk about in the wake of the pandemic, you know, we should maybe have the ninth grade be like the firebreak year, where, you know, we really don't let kids keep moving forward until they are where they need to be. But I don't know. I mean, it sounds very much like grade retention. I mean, I think it's a question of whether maybe it's a subtle difference, but I think we should be concerned about that. My own view is that in the wake of the pandemic, it makes a sense to be even more aggressive in those early years, right? That, you know, do it in third grade, even if you needed to retain a whole bunch of kids after the pandemic because they spent kindergarten, you know, online. Maybe there'd be less of a stigma too, because almost everybody's doing it, rather than wait down the road and let these things fester. All right. Well, hey, I know we, of course, have more questions than you always have answers. Even in these, being able to look across all these great studies, you know, we can see the outcomes, not always the why and the how. But this still gives school districts some good advice. You know, intervene early, provide lots of instructional supports. Waiting until middle school or high school is too late. And I think that gives us a lot more than we used to know. All right. Well, I think that is all the time we've got on this one. But again, thank you, Umut, Ozek, and Lou Mariano. You can see their Think Again on Grade Retention at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's website. Thanks so much for you both coming on.
Thank you so much for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
All right, now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute.
Amber, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
So I am heading out to the National Association of State Boards of Education Conference, and I'm just wondering, am I going to get to see you there now that you're a state board member?
I know, not this year, but I'm sure I'll make it in future years. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, we're talking about our National Working Group on Advanced Education.
Ah, right.
It's proposals for states to try to do a better job building a bigger, broader pipeline of kids who can do advanced level work. So things like, you know, universal screening and school level norms and automatic enrollment and advanced courses, those sorts of things that state boards could do from the state level.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think they're going to like it.
I hope so. I don't know. We're competing against the beach. It sounds like it's at this really nice beach resort in San Diego. So I'll let you know if we get anybody to show up. I hope so. Y'all should come. It's going to be great. All right. What you got for us this week?
I hope it's a new study, but now I'm hearing maybe it's not so new. But the good news is it's a randomized control study. It's out from the World Bank. It looks at whether providing cash incentives to parents or to female students helps to improve attendance in school. So these are known as conditional cash transfers or CCTs. They have taken place in education context around the world, including in the U.S. I originally thought the study was in the U.S., but alas, it took place in a poor developing country. But I still think as I got into it, I thought, we can still draw some comparisons to similar research in this country. And plus, with this huge attendance crisis post-pandemic, it would be useful to talk about some of this stuff. So it takes place in Mozambique, a rural country in southeastern Africa. It's got high poverty. Most children, obviously, completely different context with the children and their schooling. Most kids there are not completing their primary education, which is considered grade 1 through 7 in Mozambique. In 2014, just to give you an idea, the net enrollment rate into primary education was 88%, but just a third, 33% of kids made it through to grade 7. So graduation rates from primary school in rural areas are especially sad and sobering. For females, just 8%. At even age 19, still not graduating from primary school. For the males, not much better. It's 14% of males graduating from primary school by age 19, which again is think of it like grade 7. So the province in which the study takes place is home to roughly 8% of the country's population. The researchers from the World Bank, they met in focus groups with families so they could better understand how they might structure these financial incentives. And then once they had a little better handle on that, they split the 173 sample schools within each district randomly between 4 experimental arms. So in 2 of those experimental arms, transfers were conditional on having achieved at least 90% attendance during the school trimester. In a girls' voucher treatment arm, they gave the money equivalent vouchers to girls in grade 6 and 7, who could then use their vouchers to buy items that they wanted and would appreciate, things like shoes and school bags, school uniforms, notebooks, coloring pencils, that kind of thing. In the parents' cash arm, they gave the same value in cash to their parents, and they made those same items available to the parents that were available to the girls for optional purchase at the school. But they basically said, you don't have to purchase any of this stuff, but you can if you want. In the third treatment arm, they applied an information-only treatment in which girls took home attendance report cards. But the attendance was incentivized by cash or vouchers. And then the fourth group was the control group. So actual attendance was verified. They had people going in unannounced in person and doing spot check visits in every school twice a trimester in 2016. So that's pretty good. Their school year runs February through December. And then they collected survey data in 15 and 16 and 17. And results. Okay. So compared to the control group, all 3 interventions significantly and substantially increased school attendance. Compared to the control group, the report card treatment only, so they're just the information, increased attendance by 4.5 percentage points or 7%. The parent cash treatment increased attendance by 6 percentage points or 9.2%. And the girl voucher treatment or cash treatment increased attendance by 8.3 percentage points or almost 13%. And then there was no difference in impacts between the information only report card and the cash to parents. So they basically say, the information on absences can have a substantial effect on school attendance independently of the cash. But incentivizing girls directly is nearly twice as effective as simply providing information. Estimated effects of incentivizing the girls is as much as 38% larger than the effect of incentivizing parents, although they do estimate that's even larger, but they couldn't pin it down. Finally, they say that the attendance gains from the information only and the girls' cash incentive also translate into gains on a math test, but no effects on teacher attendance. And then they have this discussion where children, you know, we got to remember they have significant agency in their own schooling decisions, at least, you know, in grade 6 and 7. And it's better probably to give the kids the cash as opposed to their parents. And then I just looked into the real quickly, the CCTs in the U.S., and we're familiar with some of these, show modest positive effects on education outcomes, especially increased school attendance and a little bump on standardized test scores for kids, which is exactly what this study found in Mozambique. But we know it all comes down to design and implementation of the program. So yeah, I just thought we could chat a little bit about, you know, what we think about paying kids to come to school.
That is the bottom line. There it is. Wow. Well, and of course, timely with our chronic absenteeism crisis. I don't know. What do you think, David? It kind of feels like a moral hazard here to start paying kids to go to school.
Yeah, I'm not fully on board with this one, despite my liberal tendencies. I'm trying to figure out how we scale that nationally in perpetuity. It seems like a dangerous precedent to set. I mean, I guess I'm sort of more interested in what the study is telling us about, I don't know, I guess it's attendance in Mozambique, right? But it's, you know, the extent to which attendance is something that kids control versus parents control. You know, we tend to assume, I guess, that parents are the route one, and with good reason. But I think there's a reasonable case to be made that in many communities, parents aren't necessarily as efficient as going straight to the kids and trying to incentivize their behavior, you know, try and incentivize them to come to school. I'm not quite sure how we do that other than making school super, super, super interesting, because I don't tend to think we can pay them. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, no, and this is why, look, I mean, I'm not opposed to some form of payment. I tend to prefer to tie it to something that's, you know, more about effort. I guess coming to school could be considered effort. You know, Adam Tyner and I wrote about this in an article for Education Next that, look, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 year olds, you know, are not known as being, you know, individuals who on average are great at doing the cost benefit analysis of short term pain for long term gain. Right. I mean, education's an investment. We know that if they come to school, they work hard, they learn more, they'll earn more down the road. But it's down the road. That's the problem. I mean, even adults have a hard time often in, you know, the short term pain for long term gain thing. So then the question is, well, can we find incentives to get kids to do what's good for them, even though it may go against their short-term interests, that they'd rather play video games or, you know, whatever, hang out with their friends than to do their homework or to, you know, come to school and try hard. So I'm not opposed to it, but it does feel like just to pay for a showing up feels like too low a bar, you know, in my view.
But we are doing some of this now. I mean, I know many schools that are giving pizza parties, you know, to all the kids who have perfect attendance. Or you get perfect attendance, you get, you know, some little ticket to go down to the supplies office and supply store and pick out what you want. So there are, you know, I don't know if it's not cash, but it's a reward, so to speak.
Yeah, that's fine. And that's affordable. And the other, you know, this piece around parents, I mean, I definitely think this makes sense. And this is why I certainly the school district where my kids go, Montgomery County, I mean, we certainly get an email and or a robocall if they don't show up at school. The idea being that they want to make sure you know that your kid missed school or missed a particular class period in case they were skipping school and you didn't know about it, right? And with the assumption that the parent might do something about that, you know, and I think that the report card thing there too. I mean, I think it can help if parents don't even know their kids aren't showing up. That's a big issue and that they can do something about it.
And I've covered a previous couple studies that have showed these informational nudges, so to speak, can help with attendance. So, yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to cost money.
But you know, David said something important, which was making school interesting, right? I mean, I do think this is a big part of this chronic absenteeism thing right now. You know, kids got out of the habit of going to school. Parents got out of the habit of sending them. You know, the schools were closed for a year and a half. We all know because the adults in the system decided to, you know, basically to put their health interests above maybe the needs of the kids. So, you know, everybody's feeling a little less willing to just, you know, listen to school administrators when they say, oh, your kid really needs to be here every day. And you kind of roll your eyes and say, yeah, whatever. And if you hear from your kid that they could miss school and do fine because they're not doing anything all day long, they're not making good use of that time. Not saying I've heard this personally, but, you know, it's an issue. I mean, I think, you know, are we actually making good use of kids' time? Are they come to school? Are they being asked to work? Are they being actually, are they doing things you can't do anywhere else? Are they having discussions? Are they getting help from teachers? If not, you know, it's kind of sad if we have to basically bribe them to come sit in their seat just to pass the time so that the schools can get their, you know, average daily allotment.
I think we shouldn't overlook the social aspect of it either, Mike. I mean, the problem with everybody being home for so long, so everybody lost their friends, right? I mean, everybody's friendships withered up and evaporated. And even as adults, you know, who can reflect on this sort of thing and be proactive about it and are empowered to it, right? It's taken time to rebuild the sort of social connections. And I mean, they're kids, right? Like, why did you want to go to school? I didn't want to go to school because I was really excited about the, you know, how Algebra 2 was going to set me up for college, right? I wanted to go to school because I had five or six folks that I was just so tight with, you know, and man, we all were into the same girls. And it was just, I can't totally explain it, you know, but it was really important at the time is the most important thing that I get to school and so that I could take care of stuff. And I don't know. I mean, when those connections dry up, I mean, it just doesn't feel like there's anything there drawing kids. And I'm being a little silly, obviously, but I really just think that we've lost the community aspect of it, or at least it's weakened in a way that is really dangerous if we want the kids to want to come to school.
Well, that was interesting, David. My image of you as a high schooler has completely changed now.
I was like every other high schooler. What were you picturing?
I'd rather not say. I don't know. I thought maybe you were a little bit on the nerdy side as well. I'm thinking.
Nerdy and being to girls, Mike. Come on now.
All right. Okay. So good. All right. Hey, that is all the time we've got, though. Thank you, Amber, for that study.
Indeed.
New or not, it is an important one. And gives us a lot to think about. I'll be curious if anybody in America tries some of this stuff when it comes to attendance.
Yes.
All right. But until next week.
I'm David Griffith.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at fordhaminstitute.org.